Mr. Otto Rudeloff of Beeville, Texas. This interview was conducted at Mr. Rudeloff's home on the morning of July 4th, 1976, by J.A. Rouse.
In China. Then in October 1932, my mother passed away in Seguin, and my father asked us to come back. So then in January the 20th, we moved back to Seguin, where we came from. So that night, Sylvia and I looked at each other and we shook our head and said, this will not work. So we put the two little boys in school, Seguin Public School, and I took them there every morning. We lived 3 miles from town of Seguin. I took them there in the morning, picked up even. I couldn't take a job anywhere because I had to take care of these little boys. Sylvia, that has always taught piano lessons, couldn't teach because we had no piano up there, and we were not up there long enough for people to know. So when school was out, I had the trailer loaded, and we came back to Bee County. We stopped over in Live Oak County for a day or two with my sister, then left the trailer at my sister's house in Tynan and went to Corpus Christi, where we rented a house on Leopard Street for $11 a month, two-story house. Times were hard. There was no money.
No jobs to be had.
So I took a job in a wholesale grocery house unloading beans and sugar. And I had to work with the rest of the men who were Latin Americans and Negroes. And they were used to it. I wasn't. But I managed. I got by. And I took as many sacks that they put on it as they did. And I'd ride that, it was a cart, two-wheel cart. So we stayed there 6 weeks, and then we moved back to Tynan. And we had rented our house to people by the name of Brinkater. So we stayed together there for about 2 months. And they had two boys, and of course we had three children then. So I collected accounts for three doctors here in town. And then in November the 15th, I formed a partnership with a man by the name of Frank Brown. Dr. Malone had an office in this building, and he introduced me to this gentleman Brown and Dr. Tom. Now, this man doesn't know anything about business, but he is a good furniture man. So we formed a partnership on the 15th day of November, 1933. And from that partnership is now a sole proprietorship, which I own. He passed away in 1955.
Well, now I'll interject a question here because it immediately comes to my mind that 1933 was kind of a hard year to be starting a business. Where did you get your capital? Because it always starts, costs money to start.
Didn't have any capital. We started with nothing. My partner had about, I forgot how much. I think it was $160 in used furniture. And I managed to scrape up $160 cash. And that's what we started with.
Okay.
Just before we entered the partnership, when the doctor introduced me to Brown, he asked me, he said, have you got $50? I says, yes. He said, well, we can buy a whole house full of good merchandise, furniture out here for $50. I says, okay. So we went out there and got all this furniture in, $50. So, of course, I didn't have $50. So I gave a check on the bank in Tynan where I had a little account, didn't have any money in it, not very much. So I went home that night, and the next morning I saw my good friend Albert Miller. I says, Albert, can you loan me $30? He says, sure. So he gave me $30. I went to the bank and deposited the $30, but I issued a check for $50. So Mr. E.C. Steinmeier, who was also a Mason, Shriner, so I said, E.C., I said, will you carry my account? I said, I'll be short $30, $20. He said, sure. So I came to Beeville. In a day or two, we sold enough merchandise for I to get my $50 back to cover my check. That's where we started.
That's how business started. Now, were so you in the same building at that time?
Not where we are now. No, we were... The First National Bank, no, that was years ago. You don't remember the First National Bank being on the corner?
Yes.
Before where it is now?
Yes.
Where we were across the street, back in there, where the Latin Americans all have pool hall and everything else. That's where we were. The building was owned by John Wilson, who was the president of the First National Bank. And we didn't have any money. We were only paying $25 a month, and we didn't have it. Mr. John Wilson never bothered us. One day came over and he sat down, he smoked cigarettes. Well, he says, how are you boys getting along? Oh, he says, pretty good. He says, you got any money for me? So, yes, sir. So we paid him 3 months, $75. Oh, that was fine. He was a good man. Helped us wherever we could.
Well, those were unusual times when you consider $11 as being rent for a two-story house and $25 as being rent for a store property.
We didn't pay very much rent for our home. We rented a great big two-story house on South
Street. Yes, and when we moved to Beeville in 1936, Walter, our oldest son, then came to Beeville with me every morning in September 1936 and attended high school. And then in January, when the second semester started, Richard, you know who that is, Dickie, he came with me also. And so I had to pay for those boys in school because we came out of another school district. So I had to pay, and there was no money, but I managed. I got some money from my father in Seguin. We managed, and then, of course, we moved here in February the 1st, 1936. And, of course, I went to the school, and I said, we're living here now. This is our home. So, of course, I didn't pay any more school tuition.
Now, I don't know the origin of your name. Is Rudolph a German name by any chance?
Rudolph? Well, it is not a German name. It's a Russian name. Uh-huh. But we are Germans.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Yes. My forefather from both sides came from Germany in 1844 and 1845. And from my mother's side, they landed in Enola. Her grandfather landed in Enola, and then she was Bogus. Grandpa Bogus then married a Klein girl, and that is where the Bogus, my mother's name was Bogus. My grandfather came over in 1844 alone. He had a brother, but the brother left. He didn't stay here in Texas. Never knew where he went, never heard from him. So my grandfather, he was already 40 years old when he came over, and he married a girl that was born here, Schumann. And that is where up there in Guadalupe County, there's a place named Schumannsville. There were nothing but Schumanns, and they were my father's first cousins. There were seven or eight boys Schumanns, and my father and somebody else, nine, and they bowled. And that was a team. Seven Schumanns and my father and another man, I forgot his name. Every week, one night, these men would ride horseback to Schumannsville and bowl. and that's the only way they could get up there, mm-hmm. buggy, but they'd rather ride horseback.
Of course, Beaver was quite different at that time.
If that tape was on top of the line.
Yes, I see. Beeville is, you have to remember what Beeville looked like in those days.
Yes.
When did you first come into Bee County?
In 1925.
Were you married then?
Yes, we had two boys.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. We got married in 1920.
All right, and you moved into Bee County in 1925 and settled in Tynan.
Right.
And you told me that you had a store serving 25 farmers?
Right. It was incorporated.
It was belonged to these farmers.
All right. It was kind of a mutual or cooperative?
Yes. Under the laws of the state of Texas, it was incorporated.
Were your politics progressive in those days?
That oh, yes, very much.
That sounds like that kind of thing.
Yes, sir. We had a citizen party here. Uh-huh. And this John Wilson, who was our, and Dr. Malone, and a few others, they ran this town, this county, in a good way. Mm-hmm. But when they said they want that man in office, they got him in.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't think Republican or didn't think Democrat. Really, it was Progressive People's Party. Or by label, was it something else?
That was just the local. Uh-huh. Citizen Party.
Yeah, all right.
For the county. But state, they were all, all Republicans and Democrats. Yes.
When did the oil boom hit Bee County? Do you remember?
Yes.
I was saying the other day, I remember we drove through Pettus, they were just decorated with flags, they were celebrating because they had found oil there, uh-huh. and it was a boom town in those days.
It must have been.
Must have been in 1916, 17, 18 in those years. Uh-huh. There was an article in the paper not too long ago, written by Camp Ezell, and he was given some history of it.
Uh-huh. Yes, of course.
And also, an old gentleman, he's 93 years old. He died here a week or two, 3 weeks ago. Remember the old gentleman? Yes, you did. The lady came here when she always...
Yes, Pressy.
Pressy. There was an article in... I don't think we have the BP community anymore. He gave some dates.
Camp Ezell, you know Camp Ezell.
Yes. Someone was telling me that back in the 20s, when people drove around from one town to another, that the cattle guards were still across the roads.
Oh, yes.
And you would drive along and open cattle guards and...
No, cattle guard you wouldn't have to open. You just drive over.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think of a loose fence that you just pull back for. Of course,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. But you had those gates?
No, sir.
Cattle guards.
Just cattle guards.
Cattle guards.
We'd
okay.
ride to George West to visit kinfolks. We'd go through many cattle guards.
Cattle guards.
Just going to George West from here.
And you're telling me that the roads were just tracks through the
right,
through
just
the dirt.
Uh huh.
And when it got rainy, it.
Well, if you had a Ford, naturally it wasn't very heavy, so you had on chain, you could get through. Oh yes.
Did you ever try that trick that Model T owners used to try, that if they couldn't make it forward to back for better traction through areas?
Oh, yes. And then if you get into loose sand and you couldn't make it, let out some air in the rear tires. It'd go flat and you could make it. You have to form its own traction. Then when you get out of that, you take your pump up there in the tires again.
How many spare tires did you carry?
One.
Just one. What kind of mileage did you get out of your tires?
Oh, well, maybe 4,000, 3,000, 5,000 miles.
Uh-huh. And what kind of gasoline mileage did you get out of them?
That I don't remember.
Uh-huh. How much was gasoline?
15, 16 cents in those days. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you travel very much when you were first married and living down in Tynan? Did you take many trips in your automobile, or did you...
Only from Tynan to Seguin.
Back up to the family.
Any time of the day or night. We'd leave Tynan 12 o'clock at night, and we'd get to my father's home about 6 o'clock at breakfast.
And that's how many miles total? About 80?
No, from there, it was about, in those days, 125 miles.
125 miles.
Because there was a place from Floresville to Seguin through Stockdale in the on through. That's the only way you could get through Stockdale. It was about 45 miles, and there were 46 corners. That's what they said.
Continuous right-angle turns around the intersection lines. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Sutherland Springs we go through.
And now, of course, it's straight.
Uh-huh. Did you use the railroad very much for travel?
Hardly.
But some people did they not?
Oh, yes. We had
Tynan was on the track.
And oh, yes.
Did you have a flag stop or a station there?
Station.
At a station.
Now, wait a minute. It didn't have a station for pedestrians. The Express, Wells Fargo, or the Express, American Express Company had a station. But you had to, I don't know whether they had to flag it down or not. That was before our days.
Mm-hmm. What newspaper did you read?
Be Picayune.
We didn't read any paper.
Uh-huh. And
small town like Tynan. Right. In the afternoon, the men all come to the store. It says, about 2, 3 o'clock. Well, how about a dance tonight at the schoolhouse? Good. So that night we had a dance.
Who played for it?
Sometimes the Hardinas, and they all passed away. That's about the only band we had, the Hardinas. And we had a band coming out of Beeville.
Now, was this country music, or was this ragtime?
Oh, no. It was good waltzes, Scottish, Scottish.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and then, of course, hey, how much homebrew you got? Oh, I've got a case. How much you got? About 2 cases. Good. They'd all bring it to my house, because that was government property. We didn't want anybody to find beer on federal government. That was a school.
Yeah.
So, of course, we didn't want anybody else to know it. We made beer because it was against the law.
What kind of malt did you use in your homebrew?
Blue Ribbon.
Blue Ribbon.
Okay. What kind?
Well, my father used Red Top. I just... How about hard liquor? Did anybody have a... No bootlegger down in that area?
No, sir. When we had our dances, no man ever got out of time.
Uh-huh.
We never had a squabble. We're all very congenial.
Mm-hmm.
We respected our wives, the other man's wife. Never had any trouble. And now the schoolhouse has been torn down. Now we think back of those days when we enjoyed dancing. Of course, we were young people.
Mm-hmm.
And,
what was the principle? Of course, you're dealing in an agricultural community at Tynan. What was the principal crop in those days?
Cotton.
Cotton.
Once, cotton twice, cotton three times. None but cotton.
The wagons would stand in line for hours.
Can you show us that picture that I took? You had it in the album?
I'm sorry, I think Walter has that album.
Who?
Walter has it.
I saw it here the other day. Oh, yes, right, he has it, yes.
Well, if it was cotton three times, did they have to buy a lot of fertilizer to keep it going?
Oh, no, they didn't buy any fertilizer.
They just let the land go down?
Yeah.
Did they understand that they were...
There was no fertilizer, you couldn't buy any fertilizer in those days. In 1930, I sat on Mr. Yost's wagon, and had a Kodak, and the wagons were all lined up in a semicircle for the gin to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a picture of that, beautiful picture, but it's in San Antonio, it's in the album, and my son has it.
Now, the cotton belt was all around Tynan, but it didn't make it to Beeville, because Beeville never was cotton country.
That's right, because the soil here isn't as rich as down there.
Uh-huh. And I think we get a little less rainfall up here than they do 10 miles down road, strangely enough.
And there was a Beasley farm. And, of course, across from the Beasley farm, that was all pasture. Mm-hmm. But north and northwest of Tynan is good soil. Of course, they fertilize now. Oh, yes. In those days, we had nobody ever attended A&M or agriculture school. Nobody, we didn't have a county agent that knew too much about it because it wasn't taught.
They didn't really know they were depleting the soil then. They were growing the cash.
They
knew.
Yes, sir, they knew that.
But they didn't know what to do about it.
No, but they would let grass and everything grow that high and then plow it under.
Okay, they were plowing under to
replace them. And then they would never have a fire.
Mm-hmm.
When they had stalks, like cotton stalks, everything, they'd break it up and then plow it under.
They knew not to burn it off. They were.
That's right. Oh, no, they didn't burn anything.
There's no contour.
Not in those days. It came later.
We didn't have cotton pickers back in the 20s. Who picked that cotton?
By hand.
Was this migrant workers?
Well, out of town, uh-huh. Yes.
Lots of Mexicans?
Lots
of blacks?
Right down there, nothing but Mexicans.
Lots of whites?
In Seguin, we had, before 1925, when I was a boy at home, we ginned, I guess, 30, 40 bales of cotton, my father, and we had people that helped us pick, but I picked 300 pounds a day.
Oh, that's a lot of cotton.
Yeah. My sisters, my brother, they all picked cotton.
Sticking those stems in your cuticle, and does that hurt?
No, we were used to it.
And you had Negroes in Guadalupe.
We had Negroes.
But not down here.
Down here it was normally Mexican labor then.
Yeah.
Now, back in those days, I guess immigration laws got tight in the early 20s, didn't they?
Yes. And then, too, the Mexicans from over there, they didn't want to come over here so much as they do now.
Uh-huh, I see. So probably the Mexican cotton pickers might have been local residents of Corpus Christi or various towns around.
Then later, before the pickers came, there'd be some people out of Mathis. They'd bring 50 or 60 people out there at one place.
Mm-hmm.
And he would weigh all the cotton. The man had nothing to do with it. He would weigh the cotton, and the man that owned the cotton, he'd take it to the gin, and he knew how much cotton, how many pounds it was. And then when it came Saturday, payday, this man that had this bunch of people, he says, "You owe me so much." And usually it tallied out with the weight that they had.
The farmer paid the gang boss, the gang boss paid the
pickers. Right.
Well, when did sorghum first start coming in as a big crop?
You mean maize?
Maize.
Maize. Oh, 10, 15 years ago.
I see. It's fairly recent then. So up until that time ago, it was cotton.
Cotton.
Mm-hmm. Now, when people were dealing with the cotton as a cash crop, it produced one time a year. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. Now, you're in a cooperative store. What if the cotton crop didn't make? Then what happened?
The bank would come until the next year.
I see. Okay, and the store's doing cash business, and the bank's doing the credit business then.
The stores also did credit business, yes.
Uh-huh.
But most of the time, the men that had these people, renters, on their place, they would stand good for it. Or they would give them a check every Saturday. They would allow them $20 or $25, and they'd bring it to the store. And, of course, the stores would give them a little extra. Sometimes they would pay it, and sometimes they wouldn't.
I have heard that in lots of these small towns around here, we had banks back in earlier times.
Oh, yes.
Did we have bank robberies at any of those?
Never.
Not down in Tynan, not where you were.
50 years we've been living here, I've never heard of a bank robbery.
Sometimes I'll say we're in the habit of just leaving the house open wide open.
Oh, yes.
any other notorious crimes that you can think of?
No, I don't. There are some that I wouldn't say.
Yes, all right. But generally speaking, then, this area has had pretty lawful elements.
Oh, yes.
People
yes,
respect
yes.
one another. They've been getting along well. Now, down in Tynan, I'm not familiar with the population makeup there. Tynan is, mostly Anglo or a mixture of Anglo and Mexican-American?
You mean a little town of Tynan?
Yes.
Used to be nothing but Anglos.
Uh-huh.
Now, the Mexican-Americans have taken over.
I see. Were there any blacks in the area at the time you lived?
Very, very few.
Uh-huh.
There was only one family, Roberts. That's about all.
The rest were German, of German descent.
Oh, yes, they're all Germans down there.
I
out
see.
There on a farm.
Uh-huh.
Yes, they're all Germans.
And perhaps a few Bohemians.
Yes, they're good people, too.
Mm-hmm.
The Bohemians, when you're in a Bohemian territory where they trade, and you can get one, they all trade with you. They pay their bills.
Mm-hmm.
They're good people. Same as I in the store now, I have some Filipinos. One Filipino came and traded with me. I treat him right. Now he brings all the rest of me.
Oh, yes. They're a very close
oh, yes.
social group, too. And of course, it's the compadres that go from one place to another. One finds a place, he tells his friends, and then they're all congregated. And they,
yeah.
you know, they work and act together. Let's see. You must remember the crash of 29 fairly well. You were a businessman.
Oh, yes.
Did this immediately strike you, or did you think,
no,
well, those
no,
people...
No, it'll take 2 years. Anything that's going to happen, it'll take at least 2 years until from the east comes down here.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It didn't happen until Roosevelt got in 32.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He was elected in 32, and then there was a lame goose, a lame duck, what do they call it?
Lame duck.
Lame duck.
Uh-huh.
6 weeks? What length of time was that?
It used to be from January until March,
March
I believe, that
right.
you had the lame duck.
Mm-hmm. And the first thing Roosevelt did, as you know, he declared moratorium on the banks. Nobody could get a dime out of the bank.
Well, by that time, nobody had a dime in the banks, did they?
My father had a little money in the bank, and he had $30 in his pocket.
Yeah. And they locked the door on him.
Yes, he didn't. He never went to the bank to get some money because he knew he couldn't get it. So we traded at the store. We had eggs. We took the eggs, sold the eggs, and just give us credit for it, and then we'd buy groceries. And he still had a bale of cotton. That was in March. He had more cotton, but this one bale he had, that Seligman, so he sold it that day, and they gave him credit on the books so he could buy the groceries. He didn't need any money.
Mm-hmm. I guess there was a fair amount of bartering then because nobody had money.
Nobody
so
had
if
money.
You had some eggs, you traded for
yeah.
what somebody
yeah.
else had. And
of course, today the government don't want that. They
mm-hmm.
want us to use the money instead of exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Dawn, and you could have sat down all this time.
Yes, I could have. Excuse me, I went to the ceremonies at the football field a while ago.
Let's see, you had little children going to school back during this time. They went to grade school in Tynan.
In Tynan.
At the school building.
When they first started, they couldn't talk a word of English.
Oh, your family had maintained their German language then.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
We speak a fluent German.
Ah, wie geht's?
Our children don't. Wie geht's? Our children don't.
Yes.
And so 6 weeks or 2 months after they started in school, they couldn't talk a word of German. That's how fast it snapped over.
That's right.
Yeah. It's just like they had a cousin. My boys had a cousin down there in school. So if they wanted to be excused, this cousin had to ask the teacher what they wanted.
Well, you said your grandfather came over here in 1844, and this is 1925 we're talking about. So that's about 80 years that your people had maintained their German language. And,
oh, yes. My
and,
parents,
and in an area where the other people were speaking German, obviously, because you didn't need the English.
My parents couldn't talk English. Mm-hmm. Because where we lived up in McQueenie, Seguin, Shumansville, there was nothing but German people. They all came over in 1844, descendants now. Uh-huh. They were Germans. And we had a lot of Negroes on the place. They talk German.
They have to speak the language that's being spoken,
sure.
Whatever
yeah.
It is.
That would seem so funny to hear a Negro speak German.
When your boys got ready to go to high school, now I think you told me that then they came up to Beeville and they attended.
Yes.
A.C. Jones.
A.C. Jones High School.
Which by this time was still in the junior high school area, is that right?
They have. When did they destroy this building? Do you remember? How long have you been here?
I've been here off and on since 1958. I'm
58. Well, you remember the old A.C. High School? The old building. Well, that's where they went. It's not there anymore.
No.
They tore it down.
There's a school there now, but it's not the big building. There was a gymnasium. I don't know, about that part of town.
See, you first came to Beeville then in the early 30s. And you maintained your residence down in Tynan, and then...
Yes, for a while.
When did you all come to Beeville?
Well, we moved to Tynan in 1925 from Seguin. Then we left Tynan and moved here in 1933.
To Beeville?
No, in 36.
And in between, you'd been up to Seguin.
I went back and forth. When I was in business, entered business in 33, and I went back and forth until 36.
By automobile.
Yes. And then in 35, in September, I brought Walter, the oldest boy, up here. Entered him in high school. And then in January, second semester, Richard came also. Mm-hmm. And then we moved up here in 1938.
Now...
Thirty-six. Right.
The '20s were a pretty good economic period in this area, were they not?
Oh, yes.
Not a special boom, but people are making money.
Right.
And I presume that the big transition from horse and buggy to automobile took place mostly during that period.
Didn't have to have so much money.
Uh-huh.
Because if you earned 15 cents, you could buy some for a nickel.
Yeah.
Today you've got to make $100 in order to buy something. $100.
Back when you were newlyweds in Tynan, now say, well, you weren't newlyweds. You had
5 years.
5 years, but you had a family. You're maintaining a household. Can you estimate what you paid for maybe a pair of shoes or a suit?
Oh yes, $2.50
for
a pair of shoes.
Pair of shoes.
$1.95, $1.85. Men's shoes, $4.50.
Mm-hmm. How about a ready-made suit of clothes?
Oh, about $29.50, $30.
Uh-huh. And then when the Depression came along in the early 30s, what would that same suit cost? Assuming somebody had the $5 to buy it. Or
I presume about the same money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, we got automobiles then... They became general.
I'll put a chair up for you. Come on, sit over here.
Yeah, sit over here.
Hey, Dr. Stray.
Automobiles became kind of general during the 20s, is that right?
That's right.
That's when you'd expect most people.
The Fords.
The Fords. Okay, Henry did well down here.
Henry did well, oh yes.
Any other principal dealers that.
Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the Chevrolet was. Let's see. They called it. Wait a minute. 490. 4 days on the road, 90 days in the garage.
$490.
I sold Ford automobiles in Seguin back in 1925. $395, a roadster. That was FOB factory.
Mm-hmm.
$395. One day I sold five or six Fords, mostly to Mexicans. And that was in 24. They made a pretty good crop.
One reason we
23,
left.
Yes. Yes.
Well, one reason we left in 25 because it did
there
not
was no,
rain.
Yes.
One entire year it did not rain in Guadalupe County.
Mm.
In 1924, Guadalupe County ginned about 40,000 bales of cotton. In 1925, it ginned 700 bales. And some of that was in the laying on the ground from the year before.
They went out
and picked it up.
Picked it up. Mm. And that'll move you out of a county about as fast as anything, won't it?
So I wrote life insurance for a while, and then these people in Tynan came and asked me to come run that store.
Mm-hmm.
So we left. We wanted to leave Seguin anyhow. A young man, even, they can't make good in their hometown.
Not always.
Hmm? Not always. Well, in those days, they didn't have a college education. So now they get college education. They're gone 4 weeks, 4 years. But it's best for young men in those days to leave the town. They'd learn something from others where they didn't learn anything where they were living. If I'd want to go to the bank and want to borrow money, why the bank would say, is your father in town? So he'd sign a note. See? That's no good.
Mm-hmm.
People asked me, why do you stay here? I says, people call me Mr. here.
Back up in Seguin, they called you
little boy.
Your father.
I remember when you were that big. You don't know anything.
Well, now, getting back a little bit to some of the developments, when automobiles started to become plentiful, there must have been a lot of changes along with that. Paved roads probably followed as closely as we could afford it behind.
Yeah.
When did Tynan get its first paved road up to Beeville? Do you recall?
That was in 1931.
Early 30s.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then Tynan lost a lot of its
business. Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
The minute they had a highway, the little towns were, the people went to the cities.
The highways eliminated the need for the little towns, and people started.
Tynan had three grocery stores, I believe.
Yes.
And a bank.
Post office. Still has a post office.
Yes.
The railroad, I think, was probably very important to people back in the earlier part of the century.
Oh, yes.
And then as the automobile came along, did the railroad start declining?
Not in shipping cattle.
Uh-huh.
Now, they shipped cattle out of Tynan by the carload. They had a pen there. The railroad had a pen and chutes where they would load the cattle. Now, of course, there are no more because the big trailers take them to San Antonio.
Mm-hmm. When did the first road go in from Skidmore to Beeville? Do you recall
before,
that?
Before, yes. Before it came from Skidmore to Tynan.
Uh-huh.
That's about 6 miles. And then it's about 6 or 7 miles to Mathis.
That's a gravel road.
There's a gravel road. The, I don't recall, that was before my days, I guess back in 1927, 8, 25 in there, when the road, of course that was a road to Corpus.
Mr. Rudloff, let me check my tape. I'm not real sure that... Someone was telling me of what I thought was an amusing incident. I wondered if you remembered it. Supposedly one of our prominent gunsmiths of the time was checking out, bore sighting a rifle down on Main Street here in Beeville, and he had it sighted across the street on something in a drugstore. Did that happen after you arrived at Beeville, or was this before your time?
That was before our time.
But have you ever heard about that incident?
No, sir.
All right.
See, we didn't know too much about Beeville.
Mm-hmm.
We lived in Tynan, and the only time we came up here was
go to the Rialto once in a while.
Once in a great while. We had our bank.
That was the theater.
Yeah.
Yes,
we had our bank down there, so there was no use to come up here.
So it would be an occasional trip for entertainment then.
Oh, yes.
What movies did you see when you came up?
William S. Hart.
You were fond of the cowboys then.
Polo Negri.
Ever yes. See Valentino?
Yes, oh. We love Valentino. Oh, yes.
Was he a favorite?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And we didn't pay too much attention to it. We didn't
have Dita Barra. Dita Barra.
Oh, yes. Sure.
Yes, yes.
Let's see, you mentioned Paula Negri, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah, was Paula Schwartz.
Pardon?
Her name was Paula Schwartz.
Oh, is that right?
She came from Germany, didn't she?
I believe so.
She came from Germany, and then she called herself
Paula Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
That was a real name. And what'd she call herself?
Negri is a...
Negro.
Is a
black. Well, Negri is black.
Italian, probably, for black.
Well, interpretation from Schwartz. Negro, Schwartz, black.
Now, you lived in Tynan during the 20s, and this was a period when the Ku Klux Klan got to be very big in this part of Texas. Did you have a chapter of the Klan down there?
Not down there. Oh, no. We had no Ku Klux Klan down there. They had a few here in Beaver.
Yes.
You know where the Conleys live up here?
Yes.
Well, that was Ku Klux Hill.
That was Ku Klux Hill.
And that house, that was the hall what the Ku Klux had. And they made a residence out of it.
Oh, that must be the stone house just down the hill a little ways.
No, it's on top.
It's on top.
Where? Yeah. Conley Sr.
I see. Well,
The Citizens Party, they fought the Ku Klux Klan.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that when the Klan first started, it was one of these organized things, and it sounded good, and I think a lot
it
of people
good.
With good intentions
yeah.
got in, and then it became discredited because
sure.
of the fanatics in
yes.
various parts of the country.
If I had an enemy and I wanted to do something to him, I'd get Brother Klan, the old man, to help me kill him and do anything.
Yeah.
Torn feather him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what made the Klan bad.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I guess when people aren't accountable, when they can get anonymous and are no longer accountable, then their baser instincts come out. Let me... Mr. Rudloff, you've mentioned that your family spoke the German language from 1844 when your grandfather arrived here up until your little boys started school. Now, I'm thinking back to the time of World War I, and apparently passions were running high then. Did your German language cause you any problems in those times?
Not instigating. Little. My father, when he was on the sidewalk and talked to some people, an officer never told him that he had to talk English. That's what happened here to one man. And there was nothing serious that came up in Seguin, that the English-American people insisted that the German-speaking people should talk English. They couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Here there was I won't mention names, but there was two men who was talking Germans together. And one man walked up to him and told him, he says, well, you fellas are not supposed to speak English. Yes, but they couldn't talk English.
Mm-hmm.
That was very foolish of this man.
Mm-hmm.
I remember at a Christian Endeavor meeting young people in Presbyterian Church, that one young girl who was a telephone operator. She said, I heard these two women talk German over the phone, and I just cut it off.
Yes, if they had known that, they could have reported that operator. Of course, in those days, you do something like that today, the telephone company will file.
Mm-hmm.
We were not fighting the German language. So many people took it the wrong way. We were fighting the government, not the people, not the German language. What injury did we do to the people in Germany when we spoke German over here? Did we kill them? That was foolish for people to think that unless you speak English, you have in the country over there.
I grew up in Ohio, and some of my friends there who were of German descent, and they'd used the language in the home, and they encountered some of these difficulties. So I was just wondering if it were like that in Texas, if you had the same experiences. War brings out the super patriots all the time.
Mm-hmm. Not a great many people have changed their names. I have a cousin. I'm of Swiss descent, although German also. And a cousin of mine gave someone a ride, hitchhiker. And this man asked him his name. He said, my name is Freienmuth, Swiss. And he was very disturbed about that. He said, why don't you anglicize it? And Amos said, no, my name's going to remain fine as long as I live. So he wasn't German, he was Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
Still, the name is German.
Well, the crash in 1929 now hit the East, and gradually this poverty and lack of money worked its way down here. Roosevelt declared the bank moratorium as his first act in office. All right, now, in those early years of the 30s, you're a businessman. What were the general conditions? For instance, let's think about the Mexican population. Now, these are people who didn't have a lot of money saved. How did they live?
Those that lived in the country, the farmers helped them. They had brush out there that they grubbed with a grubbing hoe and paid them so much an acre to clear the land. The Mexican people that came here in those days, they were needed here. They did all the clearing of the pasture, the woods. Today they have chain, they have tractors.
Mm-hmm.
Today a Mexican wouldn't grub anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they were given aid by the farmers, and the farmers would have eggs and butter and chickens to sell, and they got by in those days where it was
mm-hmm.
hard.
Was there a big federal relief agency in Beeville?
No, sir. The only relief that the farmers got in 1933 was there was an act of whether it's Congress or whether it's just Roosevelt. How? I don't know. But in order to raise the price of meat, they killed the cattle. Down in Thailand, they had beautiful thoroughbred Jersey heifers and cows, and just went out there and shot them.
The government paid for the ones they shot?
Yes, yes. And the hogs the same way. In other countries, potatoes they piled up and poured kerosene on. That was foolish.
Mm-hmm. In some parts of the country, there was a commodity line. Some of the poor people would go down on a certain day of the week, and they would stand in line, and whatever commodity the AAA had bought up, like grapefruit,
yeah,
or mutton, or cheese sometimes, things like that were given out.
Yeah.
Was there anything like that in Beeville to your knowledge?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
You remember seeing piles of onions on the side of the highway. People could help themselves, too.
Oh, yes, they couldn't sell them. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1928, 29, they raised onions here. Most beautiful onions you ever saw. and
all kinds of vegetables.
All kinds of vegetables. Carrots,
all
beets.
All of a sudden, everybody raised vegetables.
Yes. But they couldn't sell them. Mm-hmm. So they quit.
So this area had been a truck farming area.
Oh, yes.
And then all at once the market died, and they went out of that business.
Wolfsinger, that bought this big pasture across from the Beasley farm towards Mathis, he cleared all this and raised vegetables. He put on deep wells, had plenty of water, he irrigated. Mr. Wolfsinger died, and they have sold some, I think the young man has it now, and they have sold some of the land. They're not raising as much, they very little vegetables. I don't know of any.
Wolfsinger is still doing business.
Oh, yes, yes, they ship, they used to ship all the onions and everything to East New York.
See, at the time that you moved to Tynan in 1925, Tynan was a city of what size?
100 people, 150.
100, 150, all right. And Beeville was at that time?
About 2,500.
About 2,500, all right.
Maybe 3,000.
Maybe 3,000, but it was not large either.
Oh, no.
It's called the windmill town.
It was a windmill. Beeville is known as a windmill town.
Oh, I had never heard that. No.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There was a windmill in every place. They had no water years ago. They had no water.
Oh, no city water.
No city water, so they had windmills.
Everybody had his own well then, and his own windmill.
And a cistern. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, that's interesting. Now, that's the first time I've heard that mentioned.
The windmill town.
And about when did they get the city water system? Do you recall that?
I don't.
Was it after you got here? Oh, you were not here when they got here. Okay.
Oh, you just asked some old timer about that.
Uh-huh.
Get in touch with Camp Ezell.
Okay.
He knows.
Uh-huh.
He has a mind, memory like a elephant.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, you came to Beeville in 33.
Six.
No.
Well, you moved in 36. But your business was here in
33.
All right. Now, at that time, do you recall how many different churches there were in town?
How many different churches?
Yes.
Oh, I guess. At that time? About 20 different churches.
Oh, I see.
I think we got about, maybe not quite that many, but we got more than 30 now.
Well, I don't think the Church of Christ was here. Now the Jehovah Witnesses.
But most of the religious sects that we have now were represented at that time.
Yes, Baptist and Methodist.
And we had two Catholic churches at that time.
We had
we have one
Lutheran church at the time. But there.
Three.
Not mm-hmm. then.
At this time, I guess we have three
yes,
three Catholic mm-hmm. parishes. At that time, I think maybe two. And
all of the
one
Mexican.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Our Lady of Victory, I think, is the oldest in town.
They were here.
The other one is St. Joseph.
Beeville has had a three-cornered, or three basic and identifiable ethnic groups, I think, for a long, long time. We've had the black population, we've had the Mexican-American population, we've had the Anglo population.
Mm-hmm.
The black population has always been relatively small.
Yes, yes.
And I get the feeling that the black population has always been pretty well accepted.
Yes.
Is that about right?
Have you had
a fair number of black customers over your years
business? Yes.
And you consider them good people?
Good people.
Mm-hmm. They work, they pay their bills, they do the things that citizens are supposed to do.
And they've had no trouble mm-hmm. among themselves. When the school was integrated,
mm-hmm.
so the colored children could enter the school. So then Limus Langley, he died a couple of years ago, he went and had a meeting and told the mothers of these children, it's up to you to keep these children clean. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
If you see some colored children now go to school, you see their starch dresses and everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have a routine habit of personal cleanliness.
The people were very fond of the Langleys, still are.
Huh.
Say Lola Langley in the hospital.
Yes, she is. Well, some families had colored women work for them for 25 years,
mm-hmm.
same woman.
Mm-hmm.
I have a man working in the store for me 37 years. I've been in 43 years, and he's worked for me 37 years.
Mm-hmm. So that they're people of predictable, reliable habits.
Yes. Yeah. He's a Mexican. Right, Mexican descent.
I'm sure that you have some Mexican-American people with a similar record of...
Yes.
Do you think that the Mexican-American community has had a fair amount of immigrant population during the time you've been in Beeville?
Yes.
We seem to keep getting more people from Mexico, is that right?
Yes, and we have a fine class of Latin American people here.
Uh-huh. You use the term Latin American, and that's... I think that was the term that everybody used like 15 years ago, and now that's either Chicano or Mexican-American, but all the same fine people.
Yes, I often wondered why they...
See, they don't want to be called Mexicans.
Uh-huh.
Yet when you go to Mexico, they're Mexicans.
Yeah. Well, you know, people decide a term isn't what they want, and so we try to find another. How many of the clerks in your store are bilingual?
I speak English.
All of them. Mm-hmm. I have four clerks. They speak Spanish and they speak English.
Okay, this is a town where you must speak both languages in order to...
Si fuera que si, no puede tengo así negocio con no hablan español. You can't do business unless you speak English. Spanish.
I understand that. And so, you have learned Spanish just as part of your commercial needs. In the meantime, you have no requirement for German, so that has kind of faded.
I love to speak German
uh-huh.
to keep it up, uh-huh. but there are no Germans here to speak German to. Nobody. We don't speak German here; we speak English.
Mm-hmm.
Now these two young ladies that came. That are visiting us, they can't speak English. They come from Bremen, Germany.
I have two cousins visiting.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Well, I think we've covered things pretty well. Would you like to just kind of think about anything else that might be unusual or of interest during your lifetime that you'd like to tell me about? Because... told me so many interesting things. I may not know the right question to ask.
We'll probably think of something after you leave.
I can't recall anything right now that I haven't touched, haven't spoken about. Do you?
No.
Let me go back then and just ask something. I don't know whether you have any particular recollection or not, but during the period of the 20s, you were a young married couple and young citizens, and the Harding scandals, I guess, really came out just about 1924, didn't they? What do you remember of that time? So many people have drawn parallels between that time and the Watergate scandals. I just wondered if the Harding scandal loomed anywhere near as large.
Harding
at the time.
Scandal. Harding scandal. I don't know. We didn't pay too much attention to it. We didn't have a daily paper.
We lived in Tynan.
You lived in Tynan. You didn't have a radio. You didn't have daily paper.
That's right.
And you just... Mm-hmm. There was no way that things could have the same impact. Mm-hmm. When you read about it, were you angry, upset?
Well, it happened. We couldn't help it, so we didn't even discuss it.
That's right. You don't worry about those things. You can't change your control.
People are interested in local affairs and didn't give too much attention to anything outside of the county.
When did income taxes first start impinging on you personally?
The first income tax came up in 1913. Uh-huh. That's when the law started. Uh-huh. It was what the people made in 1912, they had to report it in 1913.
Did you have to pay any in those days or just report?
Just report it.
I see.
That is my father.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
By the time, I guess, in my own experience, World War II was about the first time that the average man started being hit by income tax because it's coming up, and finally they got to where we were and we had to pay tax.
I think in 1913, I think it was about $5,000.
Uh-huh.
That the family was allowed. Today you're allowed, well, it was 600, I think it's 750. And, now they allow when you're old age, and also allow when they're blind, they allow a little for that.
I sometimes wish they'd allow a little something for a child in college.
Yes. Yes.